We are a core facility at the Roswell Park Cancer Institute, and in that capacity, we serve a wide user base with different research interests. So we see lots of different applications of flow cytometry and imaging flow cytometry. Our goal is to really provide our user base with the best instrumentation, quality control of the instrumentation, and best practices in using the instrumentation.
One of the things that we adopted immediately to the ImageStream was doing the NF-kappa B translocation assay. Now before this, we were doing all that by confocal microscopy. And the issue there is that we had a technician who would spend a day counting 100 cells for each sample. So it was very laborious, very labor intensive. With the ImageStream, that became a completely automated analysis where we were able to acquire a lot of cells and really get some very statistically significant information from it.
Our own research interest has really been focused on study of the NF-kappa B and the NFAT signaling pathway. For the NFAT signaling pathway, there is no NFAT specific antibody available that looks at the phosphorylation. So we were not able to study that with standard flow cytometry, but with the ImageStream technology, we are now able to look at the nuclear translocation of NFAT as a marker for activation. So that has really helped us tremendously.
With the ImageStream, you obviously get an image, and that's been a huge advantage because it allows us to actually see the cell. Now, by conventional flow, what you're getting is a intensity for each marker. By the ImageStream, you actually get a vision of what's going on inside or on top of that cell. As a consequence, we can use it to look at translocation of proteins, we can use it to look at co-localization of proteins. That's really affected the way we do a lot of our analyses.
What we've been limited to in the past in terms of imaging was microscopy-based technologies where you have the ability to maybe look at 100 cells or 500 cells. But if you are thinking in terms of rare events, you are thinking about one in 10,000 cells or one in 100,000 cells. With the ImageStream, we are fortunate that we can run 10,000 or 100,000 cells through. So the ability to detect the presence of these rare events is significantly improved with the ImageStream.
One of the really interesting discoveries that we've made using the ImageStream involves circulating tumor cells. Circulating tumor cells are of a lot of interest to many of the investigators here at Roswell Park.
We developed this fluorescent in situ hybridization technique with the ImageStream, and we've been able to detect the presence of abnormal cells in patient samples, patients who were considered in clinical remission, so no pathological evidence for the presence of abnormal cells, but yet with the ImageStream we were still able to detect in very low numbers the presence of abnormal cells.
What's been very successful for us here at Roswell is having a person or a group of people that are really dedicated to championing that technology. And as a consequence of that, we have a lot of investigators here who are actively interested in using the technology and a lot of different protocols that we can offer to them.
So now I'm going to move to using the ImageStream to measure immunological synapse and investigate the recruitment of adhesion and signaling molecules to the immune synapse and measure the translocation of NF-kappa B and T cell APC conjugates. The ImageStream X Mark II is our newest iteration of the ImageStream. It has 12 channels of images. This includes bright field channel, side scatter, and fluorescent channels. It can run up to 5,000 cells per second. It does high-resolution microscopy. It comes standard with a 40x objective, but with the multimag option, you can get the addition of the 60 and 20x objectives. There is also something called EDF, or extended depth of field, that's used in applications like counting fish spots. You can have up to 6 lasers on the instrument, and we have recently introduced a new mode called high gain that was designed to measure small particles like extracellular vesicles and viruses. And on the right here, we have an image of what the ImageStream X Mark II looks like. Here is the optical layout of a 2-camera, 12-channel ImageStream X Mark II. It's the same idea as the FlowCyte, but with a few big differences. First, you'll notice there are 2 cameras with 2 spectral decomposition elements, where there's only 1 in the FlowCyte. Also, there's different magnification options. It comes standard with 40x, but you can also get the 60 and 20x magnifications. And there are also some additional laser options that weren't available on the flow site. There's of course more differences, but I don't have time to go into all of that during the presentation. So for the image stream experiments, it's pretty similar to what we did for the flow site experiments. We took Raji cells and incubated them with SEB for 15 minutes. The T cells were isolated from human blood using a Rosette set prep. And then mixed the APCs and T cells together at a 1-to-1 ratio for 45 minutes, then fixed and permed the cells. The difference here is that instead of just labeling the CD3, CD19, and actin, I also either labeled them with LFA1, LCK, or NF-kappa-B. The nucleus was once again stained with DAPI, and I collected 30,000 event image files on the image stream at 60x magnification. If we look at the images on the right-hand side, we have the APCs showing up in yellow in this example, and the T-cells showing up in orange. And you can see the images look larger and clearer than with the flow site, and that's because we're using a 60x magnification and not 20 like what the flow site had. And you can see we have some nice images of cells and immune synapse at the bottom. Our first study is on the lymphocyte function associated antigen, or LFA1. We use CD11A FITSI to visualize LFA1 and Voloiden Alexaflor 647 to visualize the actin. We use the same method that I showed for the flow site to identify conjugates and synapse. And if we look at the images, we have a set from the no synapse gate and a set from the immune synapse gate. We have CD3 in orange, CD19 in yellow, LFA1 in green, and actin in red. And you can see in the cells with an immune synapse that we have a band of red, and that's the actin. And inside that red band is a green band, and that's the LFA1. And if we look at the no immune synapse cells, you can see we don't have those two bands showing up like they do in the immune synapse one. And the dot plot are conjugate cells from the synapse gate, and we used max pixel at the interface of LFA1 signal versus the intensity at the interface of LFA1 to look at LFA1 signal at the synapse. And the blue box represents the cells that have a high LFA1 signal, and 68% of the cells conjugates in synapse from the immune synapse gate had high LFA1. So for our next study, we're going to be looking at the signaling molecule lymphocyte-specific protein tyrosine kinase, or LCK. And LCK phosphorylates ITAMs of the TCR complex, and we used LCK Alexaflor 647 to visualize LCK and Voloiden Texas Red to visualize actin this time. We have different composite images than we had before. So we had CD3 in orange, CD19 in green, and then the other composite image has bright field overlaid with actin shown in light blue and LCK shown in red. And we identified the cells and immune synapse as we have done previously, and like what I showed for the flow site. And if we look at the images from the no synapse conjugates, there isn't a nice band of actin or LCK between the cells, but with the conjugates that have an immune synapse, there is a nice band of actin and LCK between the two cells, helping show that there is an immune synapse. And now we're going to be looking at the conjugates that have high LCK signal, and I do this by measuring the LCK ratio, which is the intensity of the LCK in the interface divided by the total intensity of LCK of the T cells versus the compactness of LCK at the interface. And the populations on the dot plot are from the immune synapse gate of the bright detail intensity of actin at the interface versus bright detail similarity of CD3 and CD19 that I've been using, and the pink dots are that from the synapse gate. And you can see that the SEB sample has a lot more pink dots than the control, which means we have more cells in synapse, which is what we have seen through the whole talk. And the conjugates with a synapse, the majority of them in the SEB treated cell also have high LCK signal. For our final study, we will look at NF-kappa B's translocation in T cells when they're conjugated to an APC. So nuclear factor kappa B or NF-kappa B plays a central role in regulating key processes in mammalian cells, and stimulation of the TCR with conjugate ligand MHC complexes presented by APCs result in activation and nuclear translocation of NF-kappa B. So what we did was measure NF-kappa B translocation in T cells that are in contact with an APC, compared that to the translocation in single T cells. And in the IDEAS software, it does a pixel-by-pixel correlation and gives a similarity score that represents how similar the nuclear image is to the NF-kappa B image. And using masking in the IDEAS software, we're able to actually measure just the NF-kappa B translocation and only the T cells. And I'm going to go more into this in the next few slides. So now I'm going to digress just a little bit so I can explain similarity feature that I will use to determine if NF-kappa B is translocated in the nucleus in the T cells when they're in contact with an APC. So using the AMNIS IDEAS software, we're able to do a pixel-by-pixel correlation, and it gives us a score that represents how similar the nuclear image is to the NF-kappa B image. And here we have monocytes from whole blood activated with LPS in red and a control sample in blue. And NF-kappa B is shown in green, and the nuclear image is shown in orange. And in the upper left, we have images that are not similar, meaning there's no translocation of NF-kappa B, so they have a very low similarity score. And in the upper right, we have cells that are completely translocated, and the images overlap of NF-kappa B and the nuclear image. And what's great about using an algorithm is that it can score everything in between in an objective and reproducible manner. Now back to our experiment. I'm going to show you some masking so that you can see how we can only measure the T cells NF-kappa B translocation. So on the top row are two cells, not in synapse, they aren't even touching in fact, and on the bottom row we have T cell APC conjugates that are in synapse. I'm now going to walk you through the images that we have here. In the first image, we have T cells labeled with CD3 in orange and APCs labeled with CD19 in yellow. The next image is of actin. You can see there's a nice synapse band showing up in the second row there. The next image is just the T cells with the morphology mask shown on the CD3 signal. And then the next image is the morphology mask on the DAPI signal of the T cells only. The second to last image is of NF-kappa B and the DAPI mask for the T cell only. And our last image is of NF-kappa B in green, and DAPI this time is shown in blue. And by using these different masks, I'm able to measure the similarity of NF-kappa B and DAPI images in only the T cells. Now I can compare the similarity of NF-kappa B and DAPI images in T-cell APC conjugates and compare that to the similarity score of the single T-cells. And looking at the histograms, you can see that there is a shift in the median similarity score from 0.29 in single T-cells, shown in the red histogram, to a median similarity score of 0.98 in T-cells that are connected to an APC, shown as the green histogram. And the images shown of the T cells and cell conjugates are of those with the median similarity score. And single T cells don't show much overlap between the DAPI and the NF-kappa B signal, but if you look at the T cell APC conjugates, you can see that it almost looks like a bright star pattern of NF-kappa B inside that DAPI region. On this slide, I wanted to show that there is even more overlap of the DAPI and NF-kappa B signals at the higher similarity scores. And here we have cell conjugates shown that have similarity scores between 1.3 and 1.8, and you can definitely see that there is even more NF-kappa B going into the area where the DAPI signal is, so it's moving into the nucleus. To summarize the talk, imaging flow cytometry has a quantitative power of large sample sizes with the information content of microscopy, and it enables applications that can't be performed by flow cytometry or microscopy alone. And in the flow cyte examples, we showed how you can measure the formation of immune synapse in T-cell APC conjugates, as well as measuring actin aggregation. And for the image stream studies where you really needed that higher magnification, and so we used 60x magnification, we investigated the recruitment of adhesion and signaling molecules to the immune synapse, as well as measuring translocation of NF-kappa B and T-cell APC conjugates. Thank you for listening today. There are a few people I would like to thank from the Luminex team. First, I'd like to thank Sherry Friend for her help with the masking of the immune synapse and the analysis of the studies I showed on the image stream. And I'd also like to thank Phil Morrissey for his assistance during the SEB experiments. And if you have any questions on today's talk or if you'd like more information, please feel free to contact me at hpugsley@luminexcorp.com.